From the Witherspoon Concert Hall in Omaha's Joslyn Memorial, KIOS-FM proudly presents another program from the Utihalee Lecture Series. We'll hear a talk given by Bob Farmer, publisher of Farmer's Almanac, not to be confused with the old Farmer's Almanac. There really is a difference. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Monday morning, November 8, 2004, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Utihalee Girls Village, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce today's speaker is Sarah Young, chairman of the Utihalee Lecture Series Board.
Today we're very fortunate to have Bob Farmer with us. His bio is located in your program so that you can read all about his accomplishments. So I'm very, very proud to introduce, with great pleasure, Bob Farmer.
Thank you, Sarah. Good morning. What a good-looking group here. And not too many men. You know, there's nothing worse than talking to a bunch of old men, you know? They're just not very expressive, I guess. Takes them a long time to kind of get into it. Well, let me answer the first question that everybody asked me. And John asked me this last night when I just got off the plane. He said, "Is that your real name? Is Bob Farmer your real name?" Because it just sounds a little too coincidental, doesn't it? The Farmer's Almanac. Well, it is. It's just plain old Bob Farmer. I never did like that name. I always wanted something really cool, you know, like Lance Fox or a really nice nickname. But it's just Bob Farmer. My mother, I think, is very insightful because if you say it backwards, it's even better. It's Farmer Bob. My brother got the fancy name, his name, and a religious name, Paul Isaiah George Farmer. We just call him Pig Farmer for short. That's my brother for you. He's an interesting character. My brother is very witty, very bashful, too, but extremely smart. And he has an oddity. He lives in the city of Louisville, and he raises chickens. He likes chickens. He raises these hens, laying hens is what he has. Well, one day in my office is in downtown Louisville, right on Broadway, which is a nice place on Broadway, but right behind me is a little iffy. You know, it's kind of the projects back there, and you never know what's going to be in your parking lot when you drive in. Well, one day, a couple of years ago, I pulled in the parking lot, and there was the oddest thing I'd ever seen. It was a rooster. And this was the meanest, nastiest, gnarliest-looking rooster I had ever seen in my life. Had its head all pecked off, you know, and its tail all nasty. They'd been cockfighting back in the projects, you know, which I didn't know they did that in the city of Louisville. But then nobody knows my brother raises chickens in the city of Louisville either. Well, I decided to catch this rooster because I had a perfect home for him at my brother's house. So sure enough, I was able to catch this thing, wrapped it up, put ribbons on it, feed me, I'm yours, and all that stuff, and left it at my brother's house. He called me that afternoon. He said, "Thanks for the rooster." I said, "How'd you know it was me?" He said, "Well, who else?" He said, "I never knew that roosters had knees." I said, what do you mean roosters had knees? He said, "Because when I opened that box up and he saw those 15 hens laying out there, he went down on his knees." And thank the Lord. People want to know my family background history and that kind of stuff. Well, I've been married to the same gal for 34 years. How about that? You can clap on that one. We've been happily married for about 21 now. We've got two boys. They're all grown up, but they're still on the payroll, if you know what I mean. Scott and Brian, 24 and soon to be 28 years old. They were so much fun when they were young, little bitty kids. You know, they say the darndest things. You never know what's going to come out of their mouth, sometimes right in front of the preacher. But I came home one afternoon and looked through the back window. We had glass back there. And I could see my wife was rubbing her head like this, and I opened the door. Both boys are crying. They're on the floor just crying. And I looked at my wife. I said, "What?" She said, "Fuzzy is dead." Now, that's the house cat. And I wasn't too sad about that fact, tell you the truth. But I did everything a father could and should. You know, I got down on my knees so I could get eye level with them. And I said, "Boys, look, now we're going to bury Fuzzy in the hard suitcase and put him right out there by the goldfish and the hamsters. And we're going to have a Christian burial. Nothing is working." Finally, I get that plum, you know, that every father gets from time to time. I said, "Boys, Fuzzy's gone to heaven to be with God." And my youngest one said, "Dad, what's God want with a dead cat?" You just never know. I try to be a good father. I went up once, I remember, woke my youngest son up, and he was a little bitty guy. I put my hands on his face, and I said, "Brian." He said, "What?" I said, "Do you know what?" He said, "What?" Because that's how you talk to kids, you know. I said, "I think you're the best boy in the whole wide world, and I'm so glad you're my son." And he put his hands on my face. He said, "Dad." I said, "What?" He said, "Do you know what?" "What?" He said, "I think your breath smells like a pig's breath. It's awful." So you never know. I try, though. Hey, these almanacs, I'm going to give you a little history about some of the almanac. And we won't belabor that too long. But the almanac that we have out there for sale is 2005, by the way. And it's the retail version of the almanac. The retail meaning that's what's sold on the Walmarts and Kmarts and that sort of thing. The book that, or the cover that you're used to, probably more is like this, the newsprint copy. And that's what you would get at the drugstore and the feed store and the pharmacy and all that stuff. And this is the version of the almanac that has been given away by sponsors since 1818. 1818 is when this almanac came about. And so for about 160 years, that's the only way this almanac was distributed. It wasn't sold. It was given away by sponsors. And then about 20 years ago, we came up with the retail version, which has a few more stories and a lot of ads and a lot of crazy little ads in there, like how hydrogen peroxide can cure everything if you use it properly. And for some reason, one of my jobs at the almanac is to deal with the classified people, and particularly the astrologers and the readers, as they're called. And these people, they're all related, by the way, to some lady in Atlanta named Mother Dorothy. And they all have a certain accent that I can pick up. And I'll say, "Now, are you Mother Dorothy's granddaughter?" And it just bowls them over because I can pick up on that stuff. And they can never get anything straight. They're always calling me. Mother Dorothy calls me. She's only about 76. Bob, did I send my check to you or not? And I feel like saying, "Mother Dorothy, you're the reader. You should know whether you sent me the check or not." But they don't know that sort of thing. Now, some of the history of it. Here is I was able to bring an 1862 copy of the Farmer's Almanac. And it's a very interesting thing that it's the same size. It still has the same little hole in the corner up there as we have here. We have to put that hole in the corner through 4 million of these books, even the retail book. And these days with technology, it's still easy. You know, it's pretty easy to print these days, but it's hard to, you still have to drill that hole by hand, you know, stack the books up and drill that hole. And that costs more, or almost as much as printing the inside of that book. But we have to do it because there would be anarchy in America if we didn't do that. Interesting thing about the almanac, this is 1862. There's no mention of the Civil War at all. No, 1862, right in the middle of the Civil War, there's no mention of it whatsoever. That's because the almanac is not political. The last time we were political was in 1832. We said Congress talked too much and did too little. We don't have to say anything else. We're very apolitical, the almanac is. It's all about good times, facts, fun, and folklore. Some history of the almanac. This one was started in 1818. When this almanac started, there were hundreds of almanacs in the United States. Hundreds. They were printed just once a year. Every letter had to be set by hand. It took a year to set all the type, really, to get this thing together. There were more almanacs in the United States than there were newspapers in the United States in 1818. The oldest almanac that you know about probably is Ben Franklin's. It's not the oldest in America. His almanac was called Poor Richard's. He used a pseudonym, Poor Richard, instead of his real name, because almanac makers had a habit of getting themselves in trouble. They would predict outlandish things, hoping that they would come true, and because if they did, then they would sell more almanacs. A good example, almanacs came from England, by the way, and Ireland. A good example is the Great London Fire of 1666 was predicted by two almanac makers in 1665. In 1667, those two almanac makers were hung because they started that fire to make their prediction come true, see? Ben Franklin was a character. In the first book that he produced, and there are no surviving copies, not even at the Smithsonian, in the very first book that he produced, he said that his chief rival at the time, the man that printed more almanacs than anybody, was a man named Titan Leeds. And Ben Franklin predicted that Titan Leeds would die the next March 13th at 2 p.m. And Mr. Leeds did not die for about 20 years. But the next year, Ben Franklin said, his prediction did come true, but he was 48 hours late. And so for the next 20 years, of course, this is a different time and era. You know, they didn't have CNN and all that stuff. But for the next 20 years, Ben Franklin would say, well, Mr. Leeds has been gone now for 8 years or 12 years or whatever. And Mr. Leeds was protesting that he was still alive, but nobody believed him. Some history of this almanac. Like I said, in 1832, our last political commentary, 1857, you may have seen the Norman Rockwell painting of, Rockwell loved the almanac, by the way, had it in a lot of paintings, of Abraham Lincoln standing in a courtroom, kind of like this, holding up the farmer's almanac. And what that's about is in 1857, he was defending someone accused of murder. It was a friend of his, widow friend, and Lincoln asked the chief accuser who had seen it with his own eyes. He said, how could you see? You were 100 yards away, and it was nighttime. How could you see? Lincoln knew the answer. You know, any good attorney knows the answer before he asks. The man said, well, I could see by the light of the moon. Lincoln said, mm-hmm. So he pulls out the farmer's almanac and proves there was no moon that night. The guy got off. But you know how those attorneys were? He probably was guilty all along. Who knows? Both sides of the Civil War had to have the almanac so they would know basically by the moon, the light, and all that stuff. Custer had to have an almanac so he would know when the best time to attack was. 1942, Grand Central Station, New York City. A German spy was caught. And they had on a top coat, and all he had on him when they frisked him, the only thing this spy had on him, no identification or anything, he had a copy of the Farmer's Almanac, to which he was using it. He had been let off from the submarine the night before, so they were using it for the tides and the moon and all that sort of thing. The government called our offices and said, don't give out moon and tide information until this war's over. So we said, all right, fine, that's fine. You might have seen a little snippet of news about 6 or 8 weeks ago about the FBI is looking for people that are carrying unusual items like farmers' almanacs. I thought, boy, if I get stopped, I got a whole trunk load of those things. I'm going to jail real quick. But that's because of, you know, using information in there. It's a little far-fetched. We thought it was good publicity, by the way. That's some of the history of the almanac. Almanac makers, as they're called, are curious sort of people, and they see things a little differently, maybe, than other people do. I notice things, maybe, that other people don't notice. Flew in yesterday. I happened to borrow the flight safety card just for to show you because I couldn't believe it. Have you ever read this? If you're sitting in an exit row and you cannot read this card, you're supposed to tell somebody about that. It's just a little different. Here is a fellow from Kentucky, and this guy has a nickname and initials, which I'll talk about later. But I don't know this guy. This is an obituary. His name is Mr. E.C. Nuts Webb. And he was a forklift operator. He died and so forth. Now, this just struck me as a little bit funny. Where is it? He says he was a forklift operator, a member of Satan's Sidekick Motorcycle Club, comma, and a Baptist. I just love that. Was down in the country because one of my wife's aunts passed away recently. And I picked this little brochure up and took it. It's a 5-year warranty on a casket. Now just think about that. What do you got to do to collect on that policy? Woo! I'm telling you. I get to write some for the Almanac. I'll tell you about some of that on page 48 of this year's book is an article I wrote about the founding of the rural electric system. And I always like the inside scoop. You know, everybody knows that Roosevelt founded the rural electric system back in the 30s, late 30s. But it was, to me, it's an unlikely candidate to found the rural electric system. He lived in Albany, New York, in the governor's mansion, and then he became president, of course. But why was he interested in rural electricity? He had electricity where he was. Well, here's the inside story. He built this little cabin in Warm Springs, Georgia. And it's a neat little, small little cabin, very sparsely furnished and all. But when he got his first electric bill, they said, "Do you want electricity?" "Oh, sure, of course." You know, ran electricity right to it. He got his first electric bill. It was 4 times what his Hyde Park mansion in New York bill was. And he said, "What is this?" He just went ballistic, I understand. And so they set him down. They explained to him about rural electricity and how hard it is and how expensive it is and all that. And he said, and by this was in May, right before he got elected in 1932. He said, "Well, if I get elected, I'm going to fix this." So moral of the story is, you know, you got to hit them right in the pocketbook to get their attention. That's what really founded rural electricity in America. It was a very complicated issue. Last year was one of the favorite stories I ever wrote, and that was about the founding of Churchill Downs. It was founded by a man named Meriwether Lewis Clark Jr. How about that name? Now, I'm going to tell you the inside story of that because I didn't even write this in the book. The last part of it in the book. But I picked up this. Now, I live in Louisville all my life, did not know who founded Churchill Downs. It's not public record, really. Meriwether Lewis Clark Jr.? I said, gee whiz. So I go to Cave Hill Cemetery where he's buried. I see the big Churchill monument there. He's buried right there somewhere, they said. I look around, I can't find him. So I go back to the office. Well, he's to the left. He's over there on the left. And so finally I find this guy. Here's the big Churchill monument. Here's all the Churchills laid out, which were his mother's people. And then here is Meriwether Lewis Clark Jr. over here to the left with a cheap kind of stone, and it was turned backwards from everybody else. Well, that piqued my interest, so I did some research on it. Found out, sure enough, he was the founder of Churchill Downs. I called Churchill Downs and said, "Do you want to be a part of this story? I'm going to write this story. It's going to be in a national publication and so forth." "No, we don't want to be a part of it." I said, "Oh, really? Why is that?" "Well, you know that he shot himself, didn't you?" I said, "I didn't know that." He shot himself in 1899 when he ran out of money and horses and friends and all that stuff. And so I didn't put that in the article, but I think Churchill Downs just doesn't want to associate horse racing with shooting yourself. I don't know. It's something like that. Different stories. One story I'm still working on is the difference between men and women, which is vast, by the way. And I've been working on this. I went one angle, and it didn't work out too good. I said, men are like, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. I said, men are like dogs, and women are like cats. Well, that didn't work too well, but the premise is pretty good. Dogs are kind of simple creatures. They're not real smart, not too clean. You can kick them around, they'll just come right back to you. That's a man. Cats, on the other hand, very elusive, they're clean. You never know what a cat's thinking, and you've not been ignored till you've been ignored by a cat. That didn't work out. But I'm still working on that story. Let me take a little survey here. See how it is in the middle of the U.S. Now, ladies, your man is sitting in his favorite chair, and he's watching TV. What's he got in his hand? He's got that channel flipper, that remote thing, right? And it drives you crazy because he goes from one end to the other, and he won't stop on anything. Well, we have to do that because we're hunters. That's why we do that. But ladies, let me tell you, you might not know this, but because women, see, are always thinking. They never stop thinking. They're thinking. Ten things at once they're thinking this. So I wonder what was my third grade teacher's name? I don't know. Well, I didn't like the way that lady said to me. What kind of dress was that I'm going to get? I don't know. You think I can get shoes? They're thinking all the time. Men are not like that. When your man, ladies, is sitting in his chair, and he's got a real blank look on his face, kind of like this, and you ask him, because you have to, you're always thinking, honey, what are you thinking? Ladies, when he says nothing, he's telling you the absolute truth. We can do that for what, John, 40 minutes, something like that? We can do that. Now, men, not too many men here, but you, ladies, you can fess up if this is true. Men, we're sitting in our chair. Your ladies may be in the same room with you. Does she get up, go into the far end of the house, maybe in a closet or the bathroom, turn the water on, and then start talking to you? A lot of honest people here. They do that, and you can hear your name, John, you hear that, and then we're so lazy or dumb or something, we go, what, and there's no chance of hearing anything else. It's like, blah, 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 blah. And then what do? We say, okay, and we don't know what we've agreed to. That's just the way it goes. Man came home, told his wife, he said, you know, I saw on CNN that the average man speaks 15,000 words a day, and the average woman speaks 30,000 words a day. She said, I know, that's because I'm always repeating everything to you twice. One little discovery I've made, and this is on my website, by the way. It's called bobfarmer.com. And this little section is called Bobservations. Kind of a nice little way of putting it, observations. I've observed certain things. No man in America knows how to change a roll of toilet paper. How many men does it take to change a roll? We don't know. It's never been done. Just don't know that. Some of the humor in the almanac, some of it can be kind of corny. I like to write some of it. Some grandkids, this is almanac humor. Grandkids are God's reward to you for not killing your teenagers. How about the word vegetarian? Vegetarian, according to the almanac, is an old Indian word which means bad hunter. Are there any vegetarians in the room here? Oh, one or two. There's probably a few more. They're just too weak to raise their arms up here. So. Oh, that's sort of almanac humor for you. I was in Roanoke, Virginia at a TV station, an early morning call in, ask Mr. Farmer whatever you want to, which is a little risky. And so this guy said, yeah, he said, when's the best time to cut my bull? Well, I'm a city kid, but he's talking about, I thought, oh, he's talking about when's the best time to castrate his bull according to the moon to reduce the bleeding. See, they dehorn and castrate by the signs of the moon and all that. So instead of giving him the proper answer, the right answer, I decided to give him a good almanac answer. I said, "Sir, the very best time to castrate your bull, without a doubt, is when you've got him tied up really, really well now." That's the best time. Oh, I like family humor, good family humor. That's what all that CD's all about, just good family humor. And I think that when it comes to family humor, there's really nothing funnier than your spouse's family. Think about that. I'm from Louisville. My wife happens to be from Eastern Kentucky, way over there where you never go unless you have to go. And that's an altogether different kind of area over there. I was telling John, they didn't trust me. First time I went there, they didn't trust me at all because I got all my teeth. I was wearing shoes, you know. Just didn't trust me. I met my wife through her cousin at the University of Kentucky, right in Lexington there in the center of the state. I was dating her cousin, Pamela Sue, a little blonde-headed, cute little girl. And she had one of those beauty marks right there, you know. And I got to looking at it. It was a tick. So we broke up, and I started going out with Joanne. And so I went over to her place. They call it... Shiboli is what they call it. It's not on a map or anything, but they call it Shiboli is what they call it. And like I say, they didn't trust me at first. Now, I learned certain things. I learned that if you really want to get along, you behave like the other people behave. You dress like they dress and look and talk like they talk. These people in this area, it's like they never move their lips when they talk. You know people like that? How you doing, hon? Good. Come on in, sit down here. It's like a training camp for ventriloquists, you know. She's got an aunt, Aunt Lou Ree. And Aunt Lou Ree, she wears too much lipstick all over her mouth. That's her one vice. She's a good Baptist woman, never wears makeup to church or anything, but all during the day she wears lipstick all over the place. You got lipstick on her teeth and everything, if you can see in there. But she'll never move her lips when she talks. Now, I think maybe, you know, if you chew tobacco, you can't keep tobacco in your mouth if you got it flapping all the time. Maybe that's why. I don't know. But I can tease them. They're good people. They're fun. I tease them. Been in the family 34 years. It's kind of like my own. I said, you know how come the FBI won't do any work down in this county? No, why? I said, because all the DNA's alike and there ain't no dental records down here. It's a different kind of place. It's a place where cars are on blocks and houses are on wheels, you know. It's just different. I'm glad you're laughing about them not moving their lips. I was in Arkansas not too long ago at the Farm Bureau meeting. There were about 500 people in the audience, and I said about people not moving their lips, and nobody laughed in Arkansas. One man looked at his wife. He said, "What's so funny about that? I don't think that's funny." It's just the way it is. She's got eight uncles, and it's like this guy, Mr. E.C. Nutsweb. I don't know any of their names, because in that area, you either go by initials or nicknames. You only get their real name in the obituary. But she's got eight uncles. Now, here they are in order of age and IQ, because the gene pool just kept getting a little more shallow there. There's Uncle CG, LD, OV, and my favorite's Uncle Wee Wee. And there's Skeeter and Hoot, and then the twins, Otto and Roscoe. And Roscoe's the youngest, ends up in a nursing home. He's the most pitiful. Ends up in a nursing home not too long ago. Just for a short time. A TV station came interviewing all the old folks, and Uncle Roscoe's in the corner. He's in a wheelchair. His mind's pretty good. He's sober. And so they're interviewing him, said, "Sir, what do you attribute your longevity to?" He said, "I'm going to tell you something," pointed a little crooked finger at him. He said, "Every day of my life, I drank a quart of whiskey, smoked a carton of cigarettes, and ran with every woman I could get a hold of." I said, "My, that's amazing. How old are you?" He said, "I'm 39 years old." He got himself baptized by accident. They that little area of Shiboleth, you know, there's the Shiboleth Separate Baptist Church right there. And right across from that is Miss Ophie's General Store. And next to that is Uncle Otto's Otto Service. And taxidermy shop in the back there. I tell them they should specialize, put a sign specializing in trucks and trophy bass. But Uncle Roscoe, there's a creek down there called the Lynn Camp Creek. And did you see that movie, Old Brother, Where Art Thou? Well, you know how they baptize in there. By the way, do we have Baptists in here? Are there very many Baptists? Oh, they're hard to find in Nebraska, aren't they? But I'll tell you a little bit about them. Well, they're baptizing folks in this creek. And Uncle Roscoe come staggering along out of the woods. You see, he's a corn farmer, and he gets about 4 gallons to the acre. You know what I mean there. And so he was gassed, really. And so they said, the preacher, Brother Pepper, he said, Brother Roscoe, you want to be baptized? Roscoe said, sure. He didn't know. So they get him in, they put him down, bring him back up. Said, did you see Jesus? Roscoe said, no. So we're going to try this again. They put him down again, brought him back up. Said, now, did you see Jesus? Roscoe said, nuh-uh. Said, brethren, we're going to try this one more time. So they bring him down, let him bubble a little while. See? Brought him back up, said, now, Roscoe, surely you've seen Jesus. Roscoe said, well, is this where he went in? You never know what he's going to say or do. He's a great big old fella. And we go to that church. When we go down there, and we were behind him one time as they're going out. You know, the preacher goes to the door as people are leaving. He greets them, tells them goodbye and all that. Well, we're behind Roscoe. Roscoe walks up to the preacher. He said, preacher, and this is a neat little frame church built in 1874. Pastored, opened by Reverend M.L. Pepper. And it's still pastored by a Pepper in the pulpit today. There's a lot of peppers down there. But anyway, Roscoe walks up to the preacher. We're behind him. He said, preacher, he said, that was the best damn sermon I ever heard in my life. Preacher blushed, you know. He said, oh, he said, I appreciate that, but I wish you wouldn't curse here in the house of the Lord. And Roscoe said, no, I'm telling you something, preacher. He said, that was the best damn sermon I ever heard in my life. I was so impressed, I put $500 in your offering plate. Brother Pepper said, the hell you did. Oh, you'd think he was my favorite, but Uncle Wee Wee is my favorite. Uncle Wee Wee is always saying and doing the wrong thing. Even as a little kid, I hear that his mother took him to see the new baby born. She said, now, Wee Wee said, we got to go see this baby out of respect, but I don't want you to say a word. Why is that? I'm afraid you're going to embarrass me. This baby just doesn't have any ears. It's a perfectly normal baby, but it just doesn't have any ears. So Wee Wee said, oh, I'm sorry, Mom, I won't say anything. So they go see the new baby, and Wee Wee's mom commenced to bragging on it. She said, my, that's a healthy-looking baby. Mother said, yes, Dr. Douglas said he's in a really high percentile, which is a big word down in Shiboleth, see. He said, oh, look at those arms and legs. Well, he'll be up walking before you know it. Said, yes, Dr. Douglas says one of the healthiest, perfect babies he's ever seen in his life. Wee Wee's mom said, in those eyes, those beautiful blue eyes, I've never seen such beautiful eyes on a child before. And she said, yes, Dr. Douglas said he's got 20/20 vision. Wee Wee said, that's good because he can't wear no glasses. Oh, he's a sucker for anything, for remedies. He's got his own way of believing in certain things, too. He still thinks a man walking on the moon is fake and wrestling is real. See? That's kind of the way he is. But he's down at Miss Ophie's store, and he's got a real bad cold. And he's just sniffing around. His friend said, what's ailing you, Wheeze? Because, see, he's got a nickname for his nickname, Wheeze. And he said, what's ailing you, Wheeze? He said, oh, I just got this cold. It's really bad. It's killing me. His friend said, I tell you what, he said, I read the perfect remedy for that in the Farmer's Almanac. And we go, it must be right. He said, what is it? He said, you go home tonight and you drink 4 glasses of warm prune juice. He said, really? Yeah. He said, it'll cure your cold just like that. We said, all right, I'll try it. So he sees him the next day down there at Miss Ophie's again. And that's about right. And he said, "How's your cold, Wheeze?" We said, "Oh, it's just as bad as ever. I think it's worse than it was." He said, "Did you take the remedy?" He said, "Yes, I did. I drank 4 glasses of warm prune juice." Friend said, "And?" He said, "Didn't do a thing for my cold. Makes me think twice about coughing now, I'll tell you." That's Uncle Wee Wee. One of my favorite stories about Uncle Wee Wee is when he came to church. Now, he's, you know how you got, I don't know if you do here, but you got unassigned but assigned seating in church. You know, everybody sits on the first, you know, right where they sit normally. They always sit right there, by golly. And on the first row is Sister Seidel. And the second row is Uncle Wee Wee. Third row is Uncle C.G. And Sister Seidel is just a great, big, large mammoth of a woman, just 6'5". She's just a huge woman. And Wee Wee came to church, and C.G. leaned up to him, and he said, "Hey," said, "how'd you get your black eyes?" Because he had 2 black eyes, Wee Wee did. Wee's leaned back. He said, "Well, you see, it happened last Wednesday night in prayer meeting." I said, "How so?" "Well," he said, "we stood up to sing the invitation, and, you know, it's hot and sticky. It's July. And Sister Seidel, when she stood up in front of me, why, her dress was just kind of all, you know, caught up in there. And I figured she didn't want it that way, so I just reached up and pulled it out. She hit me right in my left eye." He said, "Well, how'd you get 2 black eyes? He said, "Well, I figured by the 4th verse, maybe she wanted it that way, so I just put it right on back again." Oh my, we're getting running out of time here. Gee. Well, I'll tell you a couple about Uncle C.G., Senior Deacon Church Moderator of the Shiboleth Separate Baptist Church. And they're having an argument whether or not to buy a chandelier for the sanctuary. Half of them are for it, half of them are against it. This is on a Wednesday night business meeting. Afterwards, C.G. stood up. He said, "Brethren," he's real eloquent, 350-pound bib overalls. He said, "Brethren," he said, "there's 3 reasons why I don't think we need a chandelier for this here church house." He said, "Now, reason number one is there's nobody here knows how to spell it so as we could order it from the catalog. And reason number two, if we could get one of them things, there's nobody here that knows how to play one of them things. And number three, and I believe this with all my heart, we don't need to be spending money on a chandelier as bad as we need lights in this here sanctuary." Uncle Wee Wee's got three kids. He's got a set of twins and a boy. And the boy's name is D-Wayne, which I think in English is Dwayne. But we call him D-Wayne. And then there's a set of twins, a lot of twins in that family. A set of twins that we call them brother and sister. Don't know their real names. Just, how's brother doing? Well, he's doing fine. And this. Well, anyway, D-Wayne decides he's going to be a preacher. And so he comes to Louisville to the Southern Baptist Seminary. He calls his dad, Uncle Wee Wee. He said, "I got the perfect job for brother." "What's that?" "It's a piano playing job at the steakhouse, Coons' Steakhouse, downtown Louisville." And he said, "I got the perfect job." See, brother is like an idiot savant. He can't read or write, and they always excel in some artistic area. And his way of excelling is the piano. He can play. It's a beautiful. So he said, "Send brother up here. He'll get this job." So sure enough, they went down to Coons' restaurant. Mr. Coons said, "Well, you know, no paperwork. Just play for me." So brother launches off into this beautiful thing, and Mr. Coon said, "Man, that is just fabulous. It's just fabulous. I don't recognize that song." He said, "Gee whiz, what's it called?" And brother said, "I call that song Tipping Over Outhouses Is Fun As Long As You Ain't In One Of Them." Mr. Coon said, "Well, is that original?" "Yes, all my music's original." And it is. Everything's original. He said, "Do you know more?" He said, "Oh, yes, hundreds. Play me another one." He played another one. It's just fabulous. Bus boys and cooks coming out, you know, it's just to hear this music. It's great. Mr. Coon said, "What do you call that song?" Brother said, "Well, I call that song Don't Kiss Your Dog in the Mouth Because You Know Where He's Been Licking." So Mr. Coon said, okay, I'll hire you on one condition. You know what that is. You don't tell anybody the names of your songs. He said, that's fine with me. I don't care. So things worked out real well for quite a while, I understand. And I heard that brother took a break one time, went to the bathroom. And as he's coming out of the bathroom, another patron come in, and he said, excuse me, to brother. He said, excuse me, do you know that your zipper's down and you're halfway exposed? Brother said, do I know it? I wrote that song. Oh, well, D. Wayne did get his preaching degree. He came back. He didn't do too well. You know, he's going around circuit preaching, and people didn't like that because he wasn't called to preach. He decided he was going to preach, and a little girl came up to him and said, Mama said you don't believe everything that's in the Bible. D. Wayne said, well, honey, it's like this. He said, you know that story of Jonah and the whale? He said, you know, I've learned that a whale can only swallow something about as big as a grapefruit. So I don't believe that the whale could swallow Jonah. Little girl said, I believe it. I believe every bit of it. And when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask Jonah about that. And D. Wayne said, well, honey, what about if when you get to heaven, Jonah's not there? And the little girl said, well, I guess you can ask him about that then. Oh, let me close with a couple of my favorite stories about my boys when they were little again. They just come up with these things, you know. You just never know what they're going to come up with. One day, now here, you know, we go to church. We're good Christian people. We try to be the best father I can. The boys decide one day when they wake up, little bitty guys, they're going to cuss all day long. That's just the way boys are, you know. You never know what they're going to get into. I understand. The oldest one stood up. He said, you know, I think I'm just going to cuss all day. Little one said, what are you going to say? He said, I'm going to say, oh, hell, all day long. Just hell this and hell that. Said, my goodness. The little one said, well, if you're going to cuss, I want to cuss, but I don't know any cuss words. And the oldest one thought for a minute, I understand, after I got all the details. He said, oh, I know a good cuss word. I saw it on TV. Why don't you say ASS? That's a cuss word, and it's a good one, too. So you just say that, and I'll say the other one. So they put their clothes on, you know, and they are cussing, and it just happened my wife was gone, and I'm downstairs. So I get them seated down there, little bitty guys, maybe 5 and 3, something like that, 6 and 3 or 4. I walk up to the table. I said, okay, boys, what do you want for breakfast this morning? My oldest one just stood up. He said, oh, hell, Dad, give me some of those Cheerios. Well, I fixed him and set him down all snubbing, red-faced, and straightened out just right, you know. I looked at the little one and said, now, what do you want for breakfast? He said, you can bet your ass it's not Cheerios now. Oh, a true story. And nothing funnier than the truth. And such good intentions. You know, my wife said, would you talk to the boys before you leave town? This is about the same time. They're still really little like that. What about? Well, they're scared in the middle of the night. They run up and down the stairs all night long. I can't get any sleep. I said, okay, sure. So I said, they're afraid of Darth Vader, you know, and the whatever that was, the Star Wars. So that tells you when it was. They're afraid Darth Vader's come to our house to intimidate them. They're walking around with a big lightsaber. So I set them down. I'm on the side of the tub. I'm trying to get eye level with them again. I'm on the side of the tub, and both these guys are sitting on the toilet seat shut. I'm looking at them eye level. I said, boys, when you get scared in the middle of the night, you just call out, and Mom is going to come up here and tuck you in. We've got an intercom. Don't be running up and downstairs, jumping in bed with your mom. Now, the first thing I'm going to ask you when I get off that plane is, have you been keeping your mom up? Oh, no, Dad, we won't. They swore and crossed their hearts and all that stuff, you know. I said, okay, fine. My fatherly job was done. I never thought another thing about it, really. So I get back from wherever I was. I'm the first one off the plane. I'm going up the little ramp. This was in the old days when the families could come down to the gate, you know, people carrying shotguns walking around. It is Kentucky, you know. So I'm the first one off the... And I'm going up the ramp, and my oldest son, who was about 5 and a half, comes running down the ramp. He said, Daddy, 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 guess what, guess what, guess what? I stopped, he stopped, everybody stopped. What? He said, nobody slept with mommy while you were gone. Just kids for you, isn't it? Gosh, I think we've run out of time. I'm going to be there signing these almanacs, and then I'm going to answer all your questions, maybe. I might give you an almanac answer. I'm not sure. And we're going to have more fun at the luncheon. But it's been great, and I can tell you how great it's been. It's because the time for me went just like that. I've sure enjoyed being here with you all. Maybe we'll come back again another time. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
You've been listening to a program from the Utah Holly Lecture Series. We've heard a talk by Bob Farmer, publisher of Farmer's Almanac. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Monday morning, November 8, 2004, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Greg Petler and Randy Figura for their help in the recording of this program. Special thanks also to Tracy Wells for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Audio cassette and CD copies are available for $15. Send a check or money order to Utah Holly Girls Village, care of Tracy Wells, 3017 Mormon Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68112-2205. All proceeds from the sale of tapes and CDs will go to benefit the Utah Holly Girls Village. Please allow 3 to 4 weeks for delivery. The next lecture in the series will be Monday morning, April 11th at 11 o'clock. The guest speaker will be broadcast journalist Robin Roberts, anchorwoman for ABC's Good Morning America and for ESPN SportsCenter, as well as a host of ABC Sports. If you'd like to attend this or other lectures in the series, call the Utah Holly Girls Village at 453-0803. Tickets for this lecture will be available at the door the day of the event. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.